practical web accessibility tips.
Welcome to WebAx, practical web accessibility tips. This is your host, Dennis.
And this is Ross. I'm back.
Hey, Ross. Hey, did you know this is podcast number 50?
Oh, it's a milestone.
Yeah, number 50. So it's taken over a year and a half, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, it's not too bad considering, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, 50 high-quality podcasts.
Yes, quality, not quantity.
That's right, and a bunch of other blog posts. So
yeah, those are also important.
Yeah, and so for podcast 50, it's going to be cool. We're going to have like a little panel discussion on WCAG 2, Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0, that as a lot of people know, the next revision has been released, and they're waiting for comments. So by June 29th?
June 29th.
Yeah, check those out and try to make some comments, and listen to this podcast and go and check out the guidelines and the links and everything, and voice your opinion because they are listening.
Yep, and for those who are still fooled by that April Fool's joke back, you know, April 1st or whatever, they were not released or finalized, so.
Oh, darn. Well, maybe
I still come across blog posts every once in a while where somebody's like, I just read that they've been released, so.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a joke that keeps on going.
Oh, man. Okay, so before we get into that, we have some news.
WebAx.
So the first one that we already kind of mentioned, they're looking for input on the latest working document for the WCAG 2. And they're accepting all the way to June 29th. So read up and submit some suggestions. They've made a lot of progress since the last one based on suggestions. So it's a good way to help shape accessibility on the web.
Exactly. And we'll be talking a lot about that in a few minutes.
Yep. And the next one at our one of our favorite sites, 456 Berea Street, he talks about, Roger just has an article about HTML5 and accessibility and kind of some frustrations he's seen as far as HTML5, I guess, the way it's going now, it's not going to shape up accessibility. They're looking to put, you know, some design elements into it instead of separating it further and focusing more on semantics. And it's another thing, good thing to watch and kind of see how you can help and shape, because that also will have a great impact on how we develop websites.
Huh, that's interesting. Because there's like, so it sounds like there's going to be kind of a big branching happening, so that there's going to be XHTML, and then there's going to be HTML5?
Yeah, I'm a little puzzled as well.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how far XHTML2 is going towards straight XML and how much HTML5 is staying straight, you know, more towards HTML. But, you know, I'm interested to see how they develop, because that's kind of, you'd see that the difference is lying, but I could be wrong. So if I'm way off, shoot me an email. Tell me I'm an idiot or something.
It will be very interesting to see how that pans out, because, like, XHTML 1.0 is, like, a cross between XML and HTML. And then the next version of XHTML is going to be even more like XML. So, I don't know, maybe just HTML5 will be for more of the novice users or something, I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where each has their place, because it doesn't seem like either one is looking to go away at this point, or even really merge, so.
So, yeah, if you want to learn more, just go to the post for this podcast, and Roger Johansson sure has a couple good write-ups about the subject.
Yep. And moving on to some announcements, we've got another Refresh Detroit meeting coming up next week, June 20th. Catherine Hayes of Inner Circle Media is going to talk about Ruby on Rails. It's going to be at Canton, Michigan. It should be good, so don't miss it. And
sounds good.
Yeah, now Dennis has left the state of Michigan, so...
Yeah, I'm enjoying the California weather and California attitude.
So have you started cool. Refresh Detroit out there yet?
No. Surprisingly, there's no... I don't think there is... Yeah, there's no Refresh San Francisco or San Jose or whatever. So anybody out there listening, maybe you could start one, or... I don't know if I'm going to have time to start one, because I need more time... with the family and the wife, so what can I say?
Yeah, that's important, but
yeah,
maybe you can inspire somebody.
Hopefully. So, well, you know, yeah, so if anyone out there is interested, contact me.
WebEx.
And now it's time for our main segment, analysis of Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0, or otherwise known as WCAG 2.0. And joining Ross and me is Jared Smith and Joel Dolson. So, Jared, why don't you go ahead and give yourself an introduction?
Sure. I'm Jared Smith. I'm Associate Director for WebAIM, which is the Web Accessibility in Mind project. We're a project based at Utah State University, and we... essentially do all things web accessibility. We do evaluation work, tool development, training, consulting. We have a lot of information resources on our website and a very large community out there for web accessibility. So I'm happy to be with you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for joining, Jared. And if you haven't heard an earlier podcast from last year, Jared, we interviewed Jared there, so check that out. And we have Joseph Dolson. Joe?
Yeah, I'm Joe Dolson. I'm a freelance web developer. I do a wide variety of accessibility consulting and site development, and I also write a blog at joedolson.com/articles. where I discuss issues of web accessibility and usability as I see fit.
Yeah, it's very good. Definitely worth the subscription on your RSS feeder.
And Joe, you're at accesssites.org, right?
Yes, I am. I'm a site grader at accesssites.org.
And Mike Cherum, unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, couldn't be with us, but. He's
the founder of accesssites.org.
Actually, the founder. And
yes, he is.
Yeah, we interviewed him as well a while back, and that's another good one to check out. And fortunately, yeah.
Actually, Joe was on too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like a reunion, I guess.
Yes.
But I emailed with Jack Picard, who wrote a pretty popular blog post. Let's see, when was that? About a month ago. The WCAG 2, Woeful to Wonderful in One Easy Draft. And he couldn't be with us because it's like 3 or 4 in the morning over in England right now. But he sent me some comments. So when we have a discussion, I'll be interjecting with some of my own comments and some of Jack's comments. So thanks, Jack, for sending those in.
Yeah, to kind of introduce the topic, so about a year ago, I forget the exact date, the WCAG 2 working group released a working draft, and there's kind of a lot of discussion of, you know, how is it going? Is it going good? Is it bad? I think the most popular reaction was Joe Clark, and he wrote an article on the list apart basically trashing it. And then now working draft number 17 is out, and it seems like they made quite a bit of changes, so that's kind of what we'll be discussing today.
Okay, and I guess that's a good segue into, the first question. You know, do you feel that progress, or good progress, is being made after the concerns voiced about a year ago? And just to get the discussion going, I'll read the response from Jack, and I asked him, you know, do you think WCAG 2.0 is moving in the right direction? He said, definitely. I was openly skeptical about the previous version, as a lot of people. describing it as half-baked and of no use. I've gone public with my praise for this version. Even with some rough edges, it's now the best set of accessibility standards out there, and the sooner it makes its way through to becoming a fully-fledged recommendation, the better. So it sounds like he certainly had a turnaround in his viewpoint. So, Joe, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think in the past year, there's been a lot of good progress made. They heard the substantial complaints about the first that draft, and they took those points into consideration, and it's been improved pretty substantially. The steps between, what was that? Yes, dealing with the jargon issue. That was helped. Removing that web units thing, that was a good decision. I mean, it does mean that they're a little more technology specific now, but it's also much more understandable, and that's important.
Yeah, Jared?
Yeah, I would agree with Joe and with Jack that what we have now is certainly tremendously more advanced and better than what we had over a year ago. I would suspect that from here on, at least as far as the normative document goes, the actual guidelines themselves are probably will only need to be some relatively minor changes. There are a few rough edges, but I think what they have there is pretty good. As far as some of the other documentation, supporting documentation, and there's a lot of work to be done there. It's pretty rough. I'm on the accessibility task force with the Web Standards Project, and I know we're going to be helping them a little bit there. So when we get to those techniques documents, understanding documents, some of them are pretty bad. There's a lot of work to be done there, and that's really where I think the community can really be involved and help more on those, because they have the flexibility to change over time. You know, to be really honest, there are people on the WCAG working group that really, to be honest, don't know jack crap about accessibility. They really don't, but they're really good at standards development, and so that's been a good thing. But as we get to the actual, the implementation, we as a community need to be involved. And I just would mention that the deadline, at least for comments on the guidelines, this draft is the 29th of this month.
Yeah, and speaking of which, has anybody kind of inputted their comments to them? I'm planning on going. I take that as a no.
I lost you there, and I.
I lost you.
Okay.
I think you were asking about whether any of us have contributed. I haven't yet. I'm working on my set of comments that I'll be contributing back to the working group.
Yeah, I haven't actually made any contributions yet. It's going to take all the time I have just to, really detail exactly what it is I want to say. And so I'm going to need every minute up to the 29th, I think.
Yeah, I have to claim guilt myself, and I haven't input anything yet either, and I'm still studying the guidelines, and preparing for this podcast has really helped me learn it better and see what's improved or not improved. But Jared, you mentioned the Web Standards Project.
Mm-hmm.
Do you work with Patrick Lauk at all on that team?
Yep, you bet.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because he just put out like 2 days ago, he just put out an article about the accessibility guidelines, the WCAG 2.0. And going back to what you mentioned, Joe, about the something Patrick mentioned too, is the getting rid of some of the jargon like web unit, authored component, and authored unit, and all this weird stuff.
Yeah.
And making more just like plain terms that people could understand, which is about accessibility, what is what accessibility
is all about in the first place. It's an important part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting and ironic at the same time. But let's see. Ross, do you have anything else to add in that topic? Or?
Nope. That was my question.
Let's see. What do you guys think about, in a related topic, what do you guys think about using the term success criteria versus checkpoint, and I guess that goes back to just the methods, you know, for checking for accessibility. Like, success criteria obviously is more generalized, because I guess the guidelines are moving towards, you know, does it work with the keyboard, or, you know, does it work with you know, monotone monitor, and, you know, things like that, rather than just specific, you know, checkpoints. So, Jared, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think from an evaluation standpoint, success criteria really makes the most sense rather than checkpoint. The real background and reason for having success criteria is that they want all of those individual guidelines to be measurable. So when it comes to success criteria, you can always answer, for the most part, there's a few little exceptions there, but for the most part, you can answer yes or no. You either comply or you don't. And with the previous checkpoints and priority levels and all that, it was sometimes pretty difficult. The difficulty with success criteria now is that you sometimes have to get two or three levels deep in the documentation and explanations to understand actually what that success criteria really means and whether you've complied or not. But I think as far as evaluation goes, I think that's what they've done there makes sense.
Now, do you think they're trying to move away from the idea that certain levels have are a higher priority?
They've said that, you know, if you're at level A, that it's, you know, that those guidelines and success criteria are no more important than, you know, level AAA. You know, they say that, you know, in practicality, you know, those level A ones certainly are going to have a bigger impact on accessibility. I think that they're mostly saying that because they don't want to play preferences maybe with accessibility types or disability types. And so, you know, it kind of makes sense. Yes, you know, if you aren't triple A, then maybe you are excluding somebody. But certainly, those level A ones are where developers are going to start.
I think there's also a certain degree there where the level A are the extremely common elements. Almost every website is going to be affected by elements of trying level A, whereas level triple A may only be applicable to a segment of websites. And so it does make things a little easier for the developer to get through the guidelines and figure out what they need to think about for a given project.
Right. The other point there is that when you get down into AA and AAA, one of the big differentiations that they're making is that those guidelines there have a bigger impact upon design. And so that's one of the reasons why they've outlined it that way.
Yep.
So it looks like there's still kind of a loophole where you can have a alternative accessible page. And do you feel that's kind of a wrap-up, or is that acceptable?
Oh, Ross, you're cutting out again. Did you guys get that?
Yep. I got the idea. I mean, I've got the questions in front of me, so that helps.
Let me restart. Let me restate the concern is, it's been called a loophole before, and WCAG 2 has a similar phrase as WCAG 1 where, you know, if you've given it a lot of effort and you still can't, for one reason or another, make an accessible web page, then, you know, go ahead and make an alternative web page, and do you think that's acceptable?
Well, first of all, I would want to say that this is still to some degree under debate in WCAG 2.0. They're looking still at a number of alternate options because this requirement is considered at risk because it doesn't identify enough sufficient mechanisms to actually meet that criteria. So that gets kind of complicated. But as far as allowing for the existence of an alternate version, I think it's necessary because it's not so much a loophole as it's a way to allow for situations you haven't anticipated and that you're not prepared for. New technologies that there just is no means of making it accessible. And I think it's important to have that just accounted for in some way.
Yeah, and I would absolutely agree. I think that allowing for alternative accessible pages is absolutely vital for some content, especially as we're looking at new technologies, very interactive type technologies. Providing that alternative, is certainly better than having nothing. You know, if we tell people, well, you can't do it because it may be inaccessible, then we're going to get nothing. Whereas providing perhaps an inaccessible, say, a simulation, and an accessible alternative certainly is a lot better. And as I understand it, the real issue right now isn't whether they should allow alternative pages, but it's how you provide access to those pages. So in WCAG 1, as you mentioned, it stated after best efforts if you can't make it accessible. Well, in WCAG 2, after best efforts isn't measurable. And so it simply says that if you don't meet the guidelines, you can provide an alternative. But the real issue is how do you give people access to that alternative version?
Right.
So if they do a Google search and end up at your inaccessible simulation, how do they provide access to that alternative? And that's really what's in question. They actually have a really good write-up on the W3C site on some of the possibilities there. None of them are really perfect. I'm not sure how they're.
They haven't come up with anything. I don't know what they're going to do. But reading up on their alternate versions document is pretty interesting.
Cool. Well, that's great information, guys. Thanks. Ross, anything to add to that?
No, it sounds good to me. So it sounds kind of like, and stop me if I'm breaking up, but it sounds like it's good as long as it's not abused.
That's definitely true.
As long as you're not using it as an excuse, well, my site's accessible even though you didn't try anywhere else because you have an alternative version.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you got to take into account, business, the business aspect and everything. Like the place I'm working now in Silicon Valley here, it's a lot of Ajax. It's a web-based application and uses a lot of Ajax. So, and it's a business, so they have to make a decision. I mean, how far do you want to go with trying to make those, and it's not the whole application. It's just, a few portions of it that's just, it's so interactive and, like, Ajaxed up that, it doesn't make any business sense to do it without an alternative page. But, So, all right, let's move on. Next issue is about valid code. There's no WCAG 1, in addition to WCAG 2, there's no guidelines for using valid code, validating your HTML or XHTML to make your site accessible, even though valid code is a part of accessibility. I think most of us would agree. Do you guys think that there should be something written into the guidelines about that, or what do you think, Jared?
One thing I would say is that WCAG 2 would apply to technologies for which there is no underlying code that could or could not be valid. Things like perhaps Flash, there really isn't an underlying code. So in that case, it wouldn't apply. This is really an interesting topic. WCAG 2 does require semantic structure. So yep. It requires headings and so forth, and it does state, and I'm just going to read it because it's a little convoluted, but it says, sure. Content implemented using markup languages has elements with complete start and end tags, except as allowed by their specifications and are nested according to their specifications. So really what that says is, for the most part, your code structure, the HTML tags that you're using, all pretty much have to be valid. What it does exclude are certain things like additional attributes or unencoded ampersands or whatever. So essentially, WCAG 2 is going to address most of the validation issues that we find out there. Most of them will be required to be fixed. The less important things will still be allowed. So essentially, any validation issues that may impact accessibility or impact User agent compatibility, for the most part, are addressed in WCAG 2, even though it doesn't necessarily say, you know, your page has to be, you know, has to be valid. You know, I see the other side of this, though, that I don't think, you know, perhaps nothing would bring more awareness about accessibility in a broader arena than requiring valid code. Because if you want to learn about accessibility, you learn about valid code, you learn about alternative text and so forth. But, you know, at a minimum, you know, maybe this will make it so people will start sending me hate mail when I forget to encode an ampersand on my website, you know, and they think I'm ignoring people with disabilities. So, you know, and that's really what it comes down to. Is
yeah.
Validity can impact accessibility in some ways, but for the most part, it really has no impact. And so I agree, actually, with WCAG in not requiring it.
Okay. Yeah, that's the argument that I had heard also, is that, you know, invalid code doesn't necessarily mean a site's inaccessible, and valid code doesn't necessarily mean the site is accessible.
Yeah, I'm pretty much with Jared there. I mean, I certainly strive to do valid code in my projects, but I recognize as well that it's not because of accessibility. I mean, you can write bad code, and that'll cause problems with accessibility, but good code and valid code for accessibility purposes are not the same thing. They're not identical, though very similar. You can also write valid code, which is perfectly valid and a complete and utter mess as far as accessibility goes. So I think they did the right thing.
Yeah. If I could just, you know, put a plug in here for Jack Picard, he had what I think is kind of the quote of the century on WCAG 2, because it really addresses this issue of that WCAG 2, you know, one of their main principles is robustness and compatibility with user agents and future user agents. And he essentially says, in fact, I'll just read it, he says, I personally don't think validity goes any further beyond essentially the purpose of WCAG 2 than robustness does. So he says, as robustness with future user agents has little to do with current accessibility, but does have a lot to do with validity. So essentially what he's saying is, you know, they have a focus on robustness, but if they want to be robust, it doesn't have a lot to do with accessibility. It has everything to do with validity. And so, you know, it's kind of an interesting little twist on really what they're trying to do with WCAG 2. If they really want to be robust, you know, validity really is the way to do that.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic. And, I mean, I agree with you guys for the most part. I mean, obviously, your code has to be good. It doesn't have to be perfectly valid. But there is another small twist to it that that Patrick Lauk brought up in his article that I thought was kind of amusing but partially true, is that he says the decision about or suggests that the decision of leaving the validity part out of it was at least in part politically motivated and pushed through by certain individual members of the working group. And in between the lines about that, I think they're talking about that big company out of Seattle.
Yeah,
Redmond.
Yeah, I looked at that. I think that there were probably some political motivations, but from an industry perspective, to put in validity really might cause a lot of barriers to, you know, not only what they do, but to actually, you know, the implementing and you know, the ability for WCAG 2 to be applied in other places. And so, you know, I can really see both sides of that.
Okay. Ross?
I mean, I could see kind of the same situation. I guess I don't have anything else to add at this point.
You want to go on to the next topic? Go ahead, Ross.
Sure. I was looking through the change document that showed what had been changed since the last one. I noticed it seems like they made a lot of effort to change any wording that said, you know, this will make your site accessible, to it will improve a site's accessibility. And I kind of wondered if you thought that might discourage people who are just trying to kind of get into accessibility, because it sounds like the thing to do, and it almost starts to say that no matter what you do, it's not going to cater to everyone, even if it is true.
You want to jump in first, or shall I?
Go ahead, Joe.
What I have to say about that is I think it's a great change, actually, because what they're going to get away from is people who look at the guidelines and say, oh, I do this, and now my site's accessible. I'm done. And I think that's one of the worst approaches you can take to accessibility is to just look at the guidelines and meet them and say, well, I'm finished. I mean, I've done what I need to do. And this really helps emphasize the fact that everything you're doing is improving the accessibility, but it's not necessarily solving every problem. It's just
exactly
fixing this one aspect.
Yeah, and I totally agree. I like the approach that they've taken. You know, conformance really should not be our goal. Accessibility should be our goal. My approach is, or my thought is, that we should use the guidelines as tools for making content accessible.
Mm-hmm.
If people just focus on conforming with the guidelines, that's a real painful process. And to be honest, it may not result in the best accessibility. But if we use those guidelines, as a tool in our design and development, and to help teach us what accessibility really means, then we will result in better accessibility. And I think that's what they're saying, is that, you know, just because you do this doesn't necessarily mean you are accessible. And that doesn't even really bring up the issue of cognitive disabilities, which they have stated they do not specifically address.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that kind of leads into another point about testing for accessibility, or like a lot of people like WCAG 1.0 because it had the checkpoints, you know, and I, even though, you know, that should, if you mark off the checkpoints, you're doing this, and this, you know, I mean, obviously that's not a blanket, you know, you have to check it in other ways. And then in WCAG 2.0, there's a quick reference, and do you think using the quick reference, like people use the checkpoints in the version 1, is a bad thing, or do you think that would suffice?
I think it's a start. In its current form, it's fairly difficult to use. If developers want to really understand WCAG 2, we're going to need probably some external resources. You know, we're going to need a lot of WCAG 2.0 for Dummies books and articles out there. I think a lot of the endless cross-referencing, the definitions, references to all of these other documents makes the whole thing a little bit difficult for developers, especially those that don't understand accessibility. I will say, if I were to point somebody to an article, I wouldn't probably point them to the quick reference. I'd point them to the Understanding WCAG 2.0 document. I think that's the one that actually explains what the guidelines mean and why the guidelines are there, what they mean and the impact they have on accessibility, and then what are some specific things that you can do to meet those criteria. So, I don't know, it's a good reference. It just needs to be polished.
I'm inclined to say that the quick reference isn't, I mean, it's not, as I see it anyhow, it's not intended to be a method to help developers understand WCAG 2. It's a tool to use while you're developing to, you know, refer to get a quick reminder of what this guideline says as in concepts of WCAG 2. You really need to take a broader approach than just the quick reference to really be able to make use of it. But once you've done that, you know, hopefully you don't need to go back to the entire document every time you're making a change and say, well, is this how that goes? Let me check. And the quick reference will allow you to see that quickly and will point you to where you need to go if you do need more clarification.
Okay, great. Ross, you want to take us to the next issue?
Sure. It seems like in the latest document, they talk a lot more about CSS and accessibility concerns. But really, kind of reading over, it seemed to me, at least, that it wasn't so much problems with CSS, but just bad coding in general with the use of CSS. Have you kind of noticed any parts of it that talk about CSS that really aren't CSS problems, or do you feel that they're CSS problems?
Hmm.
I'm not exactly sure where you're going with the question, but I think that it's very technology agnostic, but we all deal with technologies, and so I think sometimes interpreting what a guideline means and kind of, you know, funneling that back to the technology we use is pretty difficult. Now, there are a lot of things in there regarding color and size and resizing and relationships, visual and semantic relationships between elements that aren't necessarily code things, that are very visual things that would, you know, CSS would have an impact on those things. And so, I'm not really sure, but CSS certainly is addressed in those regards.
Yeah, I mean, I'm inclined to say that I didn't particularly notice anything addressed in WCAG 2 that was talking about CSS in particular. It does end up being kind of a complicated document because they're trying to stay away from particular technologies, and so sometimes you look at something and say, well, I think they're talking about CSS here. But they might be talking about something else. They might be talking about XSLT. I mean, it depends on what we're talking about, how far in the future.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, in the guidelines themselves, they don't, you know, really address specific technologies. But when we get to the, you know, techniques document,
yeah, that's different.
You know, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely different, and they need a lot of help with some of the examples. You know, some of them are kind of out there, and so they need some better real-world examples primarily in their examples with CSS, you know, so that people can see the actual examples of what they should be doing or what they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, the portion that I'm recalling, and maybe it was in the techniques, was they're talking about kind of source order for the HTML documents itself, but then using CSS where things would be positioned differently. So a screen reader or text browser, it might not make sense where the CSS would put everything properly in line.
Yeah, that's actually one thing that I have on my list to think more about is essentially what it says is that your source order that a screen reader would read needs to be the same as the visual order, roughly something along those lines. And you know, there may be cases where that doesn't make sense. You may want to present some accessibility information specifically to screen readers first that maybe wouldn't appear in the visual code, or maybe would appear somewhere else in the source or in the visual page because it's of less importance to somebody that's not using a screen reader. So that's one thing I know I need to think more about.
Well, and I'd also say that there are many examples where the visual display isn't linear. I mean, it doesn't have a natural source order, I mean, a natural reading order visually. So presenting it in the same order is kind of user-dependent. It really is more important that you need to present the source in a logical order, whatever order that should happen to be.
Right.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, that's a hard thing to measure. If you've got three columns of information, what would people look at first?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Well, I guess that just goes along with the same, you know, this, you'd use the same technique pretty much as, you know, if you turn off the style sheets, you still want it, you know.
You want to be able to use it.
Yeah, readable and usable and have it in a logical order. So hopefully a lot of us are doing that already.
I would hope.
Yeah. Well, I know you are, Joe, so that's good. Okay, that's all the main questions we had. Ross, any other issues you wanted to bring up or questions?
Yeah, I just kind of wondered if there were any specific areas that you thought still needed work that you wanted to talk about. I know you'd mentioned kind of we just now talked about source order versus visual order. Are there any others like that?
I mean, the biggest thing that WCAG 2 really doesn't address, of course, is cognitive disabilities. And perhaps what is really needed is to develop a specific set of guidelines purely for cognitive disabilities. But I guess that's something I'd like to see addressed. I don't really know for certain that WCAG 2 is the right place for it, though.
Yeah, that's one that would be on my list. And really what they have said on the matter is that, you know, they need more research. I know that's an area that WebAIM's doing, going to be starting a lot of research on, is, you know, cognitive disabilities in the web. And it's huge. I'm on an advisory panel that's formulating the Section 508 guidelines. By the way, there's a preliminary draft of the Section 508 guidelines as if you didn't have enough reading to do with WCAG 2.0. Yeah. But, you know, that's an area that we need help in. And it's very, in many ways, is similar to WCAG 2.0. But, you know, we haven't really gone there either to cognitive disabilities just because there isn't enough research to back it up. You know, beyond that, there are some, there are a few things. I'm going to put together some comments and make a blog posting and send them over to the W3C. But, you know, there are some more things, especially down to like level AAA. That maybe are going to be a little
work.
Interesting. Yeah, just or maybe a little rough around the edges. There are some things that were a little bit of surprise to me that they put in. You know, one that's interesting to me is they specify that if the text requires more than a lower secondary education level, then you need to supplement that with something that's more accessible. And in WCAG 1, it says, you know, use the clearest and simplest language appropriate for a site's content. Well, that's not measurable. So they said, well,
right.
You know, I think they just kind of guessed, well, what, you know, what's a good thing to measure that is going to probably result in good accessibility? Well, that's, we'll call it lower secondary education level. Well, that's not very measurable either. And so that's,
there's all sorts of readability tests, but they're not something you can count on.
Yeah, that's a hard one, and I don't know if that needs to go away because it can't be measurable, but, I think we deal a lot with education, and if it's a college chemistry class, does that make sense to maintain that lower secondary education level reading level when your audience is not going to benefit, and in many ways it can make it less accessible by providing that type of an alternative. And so that's at least one of the few areas that I identified this as being problematic.
Pat put that in his article too, and he quoted the WCAG 2.0, and they actually say that these guidelines are not able to address the needs of all people with disabilities.
Right. Another thing that is going to be interesting is that very few sites will reach AAA compliance. Just because of the onus, the burden on some of those. For instance, if you have a video on your website, you must provide sign language interpretation if you want to be AAA compliant. You know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Really what it means is that there will be a few sites that will probably make a conformance claim to AAA.
Right. It makes it a very significant challenge to achieve that level that not many people will really make it to.
Yeah. But it's all right. You know, it gives us a good goal to shoot for. You know, in all, being on this Section 508 panel, I'll tell you, standards development is hard. It's difficult working out those language issues. And I think the developments they've made in the last year, I really think they're to be commended for the changes and efforts they made. I'm fairly pleased with it.
Have to agree.
All right, well, that's pretty good. Dennis, do you have any other questions? Or?
Yeah, we'll just go around the table. One of the main things in the just a quick yes or no, kind of a fun thing. The WCAG 2.0, we didn't really mention it, but it's based on PORE, the four principles, perceivable, operable, understandable, and robust.
Yeah.
And so what do you guys say to that, yay or nay? Ross?
Say that again?
Yay or nay?
And to the part before it.
The PORE, perceivable, operable, understandable, robust. Like, do you think that's a good way to describe those things?
it's describing the WCAG 2, you're saying?
Yeah. Like, that's how they're that's kind
organizing
like,
the document.
Yeah, that's kind of like some overlying principles in the WCAG 2.0, you know, measuring.
Yeah, I would say that, yeah, they've done that.
Yeah, I say yay. You know, in fact, we've kind of stolen those principles from him. We actually have begun approaching a lot of the work that we do, evaluation work, training, actually centering those around those four principles. And so I think that underlying structure, those four principles, are the perfect basis on which to be building the rest of this.
Joe?
I'm inclined to say the same thing. I think it's just a very clear and simple way of putting the idea of accessibility, just stating that something that's accessible needs to meet these four principles in a wide variety of situations, in all situations, ideally. And I think that's an ideal way of placing it.
Great.
Good foundation.
Yeah, I have to agree. So, okay, well, thank you, Jared and Joe. And Ross, of course, for joining in on this conversation. And I received another email from Mike Cherum a few minutes ago, and he apologizes for the technical difficulties and wished he could be with us. So we'll have to have him some other time.
Try again.
Yeah, we'll try again in a few months. Maybe we'll put something else together, see what we could conjure up here.
Yeah, so, we'll have another reunion.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we could ask Patrick Lauk or someone else to join in, so that'd be cool. Or Paul Boak, too. I asked him to join also, but he's also like probably sound asleep at 3 or 4 in the morning over there, so I don't want to...
Excuses.
Yeah. Well, I know I wouldn't want to get up at 4 in the morning for something, for anything, unless my house was on fire or something. But.
Fair
enough. Okay, guys. Thanks a lot. And we'll talk to you later then.
Thanks,
Dennis.
Okay, guys, bye.
The WebAx blog and podcast is located at webaxe.blogspot.com. webaxe.blogspot.com. Email WebAx at webax@gmail.com. webaxe@gmail.com. To leave a voice message, call 206-203-0585. WebAx is sponsored by Check Engine USA, website tune-ups and overhauls. www.checkengineusa.com.